On est préparés pour commencer la meeting. Et premièrement, j'aimerais vous souhaiter la bienvenue. Vous souhaiter un bonsoir. Bien content que vous êtes venus.
Welcome to Encore. That was the Balfour Brothers with Ali Young, Knock Ali, and Dick Richard, and that was Hicks Wagon Wheel. And that was recorded by Barry Ancelet some time ago.
1977.
There it is. And that mysterious voice, maybe to some of y'all, is John Pud Sharp. And he's with me here in the studio today to talk about his upcoming documentary. And we started off with the Hicks Wagon Wheel because his documentary is about dance halls and clubs. And Pud, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Megan. Thanks for listening in, everybody. My project is about dance halls. I feel like I've been on KRVS quite a few times, and hopefully the word's getting out. I've been having a lot of people get in touch with me about it. But it started out because I recognize these songs, these Cajun songs that are standards that lots of people play, that the names are in English, which was easy for me to grab a hold of. And I wondered, what do they mean and what's their significance? And luckily, I work in the Center for Louisiana Studies in the Archive of Cajun and Creole Folklore. And our archivist there is Chris Segura, that plays in Fofolé and the Lafayette Rhythm Devils. And so he let me know that these things are titles of dance halls and sort of theme songs, if you will, for these places. And, and that's kind of what started the whole thing.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And you came on one time on my show with Jennifer Guidry, but you were here for like 15 minutes. You had to run and go pick up your son.
Oh, that's right.
But, it's good. I'm excited about it. What do you plan on calling the documentary again?
I'm not sure. I'm still kind of looking for a snappy title. Mm. If anybody has an idea, please get in touch with me and let me know.
All right. Well, Pud brought some interesting stuff for us today to listen to. We have a couple recordings from dance halls or festivals, and some interviews of women talking about their memories of dance halls, and you wanted to start with a waltz?
Well, I guess this next song is Camille Doucet and Jimmy Thibodeau from 1977. And I'm pretty sure that this is from Festivals Acadienne,
mm-hmm.
Which is in honor of our, the upcoming festival. We decided to feature a lot of songs from that today.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You learned from like a lot of the people that you've been interviewing, apparently, that they used to start with waltzes at dance halls.
Yeah, several older musicians told me that they like to start with a waltz because it makes people start to dance.
It's a good warm-up song.
Yeah.
All right, let's listen to Camille Doucet and Jimmy Thibodeau. It's Team Maurice.
Tout le monde connaît UT Maurice.
Can we tell everybody hello?
Hello, everybody.
Everybody happy out there? Man, I can't hear nothing. Come on.
What a great recording. That's Camille Doucet and Jimmy Thibodeau with Team Maurice from Festival Acadien 1977. And if you're just joining us here for Encore, we have Pud Sharp in the studio with us today. And he's talking about his documentary coming up on dance halls, and he brought some recordings for us to listen to. We were talking during that little song break about, I saw this stack of papers that Pud brought in with dance hall names and where they were located and stuff, and he said you have upwards of around how many dance halls?
I currently have over 800 dance halls. It's kind of a little tricky because those aren't just dance halls. Those are dance halls, clubs, mm-hmm. and some of those are public multi-use halls, places like Woodman in the World and stuff like that. But I wanted to include them as places that held dances because I would rather get too much information than be selective, too selective at this point.
Yeah. Now, all of the dance halls you're finding, you said we were talking about one older player that Pud interviewed, and he said he played all the way from Morgan City to Houston, anywhere between there. Or the dance halls that you're finding there in Texas and just southwest Louisiana, or anywhere in Louisiana?
Anywhere in Louisiana, but, you know, there was a large number of halls at the state line, mm-hmm. because the drinking age in Texas was 21, and at this time, the drinking age in Louisiana was 18. Mm-hmm. So, as you can imagine, the state line was a pretty hopping place to be. Yeah.
I'm sure, yeah. That's cool. And where are you getting all this information from?
Oh, I'm getting it from doing a lot of interviews. I've gotten some press recently that's made me get some a lot of interesting phone calls and emails from people, and I hope that, you know, I get some from this today. That would be great.
Yeah.
But I find out people that someone owned a dance hall in their family. A lot of people like that have been getting in touch. Also, just people that, you know, maybe they were more like a collector and they collected posters, or they actually used to print tickets to dances back in the day. It was a very formal affair, and things like that. People coming across little tidbits here and there that are forwarding them to me. And I'm amazed that, like I said, after a year and a half of doing research, I'm still pretty consistently adding to the list.
Wow. That's incredible. About how many of those out of the plus 800 plus dance halls, about how many of those are still standing?
Oh, less than 100 easily, probably less than 50. That's currently is one of my projects, is that I would love to know even places that are not in use, if they're still standing. I'd like to go document them before they eventually succumb to time.
Yeah.
Places like some of the more interesting places that I've been guided to are, you know, Bork's Club in Lewisburg. I got there just in time to see the last pile of rubble from Guidry's Friendly Lounge in Lewisburg. Mm. Someone told me about Webster's in Cecilia, which is a different spot than it used to be, and now it's been moved and it's a meat market. And that's really interesting, because you can walk in and you walk in the front door and you're on the dance floor. It's just a different use for the building now.
Yeah. I've heard of Webster's, not as the dance hall, as the meat market.
Yeah.
I heard they have pretty good plate lunches. Is that true?
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to give out your information right now, just in case while people are actively listening about calling? And
yeah, I would be happy to do that. My phone number, and that's at the Center for Louisiana Studies in the Archive of Cajun and Creole Folklore. My phone number is 337-482-1320. And my email address is johnsharp@louisiana.edu, and that's johnsharp.
All right, so johnsharp@louisiana.edu.
That's me.
Awesome. Well, we're up next on the itinerary, I guess. We have some interviews that who recorded these interviews?
These interviews were recorded by British researcher and author John Brovin.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the book South to Louisiana, and I believe he did these in conjunction with Johnny Allen. And the interviews are, the two ladies being interviewed are Helen Falcone Guyot and Marie Falcone. And this is from 1983.
All right. We're going to listen to, I think we have three tracks selected with some interviews from them.
But Dad and Panaju would play by themselves.
Panaju started playing dance when he was 17 years old.
Okay, and what clubs did he play at?
It wasn't no clubs in them days. It was just old country dance halls there was.
Okay.
We didn't even know what a club was.
Yeah. Can you tell me what those dance halls were like?
Well, some of them, before you'd get there, you swear you was going to a barn instead of a dance hall.
Yeah.
You'd get inside. They had, like, they call it a bullpen. And you'd go in. Well, that was, the men would sit there, the one that didn't pay to go in. And by the way, to go in, it was 15 cents for the men. The ladies was free.
Right.
Then you had the dance hall. You had benches all around the dance hall.
Yeah.
If your mother didn't go to bring you, your grandmother did. And they watched every step you made. They watched when you dance, if you dance too close to the boy. You couldn't hold him in the neck, you have to put your hand on his shoulder.
All right, we're tricking those dancers.
Yeah. The girls would all stand up. Then the boys would go and invite them to dance. When it was, you didn't have no, the girls didn't have no place to sit. So when the dance was in, they'd all stand in a circle. Then this one would get that one, you know, you all talk. But the best part that I can remember is the drinking water at the dance. It was a barrel they had. And there was a little tin cup. And everybody drinking that tin cup, and nobody never got sick.
Tell them about the babies, what the mother would do with the babies.
The pop was a nickel a bottle.
Yeah.
The candies were on a nickel, but the candy, it was more safe that you eat them in the dark than in the light, because there wasn't no refrigerator to keep them cool.
Did they sell beer?
No.
Homemade.
Outside, but not in the hall, no?
Moonshine.
People brought
their own. They brought their own.
You had to go hide.
Ladies wouldn't drink up.
You had to hide, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
What sort of dances did you do?
Oh, waltz, two steps. There wasn't no jitterbug in them days. It was dip.
It was what?
Dip. You know, you'd be dancing and dancing a lot, you'd go down on a knee, they call it dip.
Uh-huh.
That's with the waltz?
No, that was a fast dance, a two-step. You had a one-step and a two-step.
Yeah.
And then they had the polka and all, but that was before our day. The what?
Tell them what you made, you had me punished for one time.
Well, you can tell.
Come on, Helen. Yes, tell me.
We weren't supposed to hold hands when we'd go, and Pani Joe would watch us like heart. You know, he'd take care of us. We wasn't even supposed to hold hands to go to the car after the dance was over. So, she was always upper than the others. She was a dance mode. So she led the boy holder in the neck. We got home. I don't know what she did to me. I told Mama, I said, Your chalet girl, 13 years old, the boy was holding her in the neck last night. Then she went back and told Mama I had kissed the boy going to the ball. That punished both of us. I hope you don't have that on tape.
Where were some of the clubs that Uncle George and
Grandpa
when he came back from New York?
The first call I remember was Nezi for Gitri.
No,
on Easy Fall Gates.
His first hand job when he came back from New York was at Pocono in Lafayette.
They played Lafayette, but he played over there in Rain. That was...
One at a time.
What was the Bobby Knows? The
Black, we say that. Black. Well, listen.
Yeah.
Okay. They, the one, and Pani Joe would play at that Gidry Hall. What did they call that hall now? I don't remember.
Okay, that was the name of the
dance floor.
That was the name of the dance floor. Nezi for
the honor of the dance hall.
Right, so that was in Rain.
Mm-hmm. Okay, where else?
And OSD.
Okay.
And Esperado in Bosco, Mir.
Gerard
Forestier. Estaiber.
Alexandre
Landes.
Where was that
at? In between Judith and Lisa. And in Carahul, it was an old schoolhouse that they passed there. And Hagberry, and Hayes.
Orange,
and Godot.
Johnny said that he used to play
around Port Arthur.
In Port Arthur.
During the weekdays, wasn't it? And
in Port Arthur. We'd leave on Friday. We played Friday in Hayes, Saturday in Port Arthur, and Sunday, I can't remember where. In Hagberry, no. Saturday in Hagberry.
Saturday in Hayes.
And Sunday in Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
We played three games without our coming back. Sometimes I wonder why Mama didn't worry more.
Can you believe at Four Corners there, where Jacob Restaurant is right now?
Uh-huh.
They had an old dance hall that was about ready to fall apart. And he played there too, Cyril Roman, dance hall.
What was that one called?
Huh?
What was that dance hall called?
So, in that theater here, Jacob got the big restaurant there, Cyril Roman. Dance hall.
Robert.
That's Robin, anyway.
Okay, right.
And we didn't actually introduce who those women were before we played it, and I think it's interesting. I just found out that these two women existed yesterday, and then today Pud walks in with a recording of the two women talking. And Pud, do you want to introduce the two women?
Yeah, that was Helen Falcon Guyot, which is Johnny Allen's mother,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Allen Guyot, and his aunt, Marie Falcon, and they're talking about Ulyss and Joe Falcon, and how they used to travel and dance halls that they used to play, and different places, and a little bit of life on the road, and what that was like.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You know, these kind of, sometimes I'm lucky enough to find these kind of interviews, and these are from the Archive of Cajun Creole Folklore, which a lot of the stuff that, you know, is on your show is, but. It's just amazing that someone had the forethought to ask the question if you were there that you would want to know the answer to, and
mm-hmm.
they just gave a little tour of dance halls from Lafayette to Port Arthur, Texas, and back with all the stops along the way. What day of the week they would play, and some of the names of the clubs were mentioned, and Hackberry and T. Maurice and all, you know, different places, and so it's just a perfect little encapsulated moment of time, you know, that somebody did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I kind of laughed, but like not thinking about why I was laughing, but you brought it up, like the contrast between John Brovin's voice and our two little Cajun women talking is really hilarious.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a very special thing, and then it's great at the end of that track, they're telling him about the Roban dance hall, and they finally say, "You would say Robin," and he understands. But until then, he thinks it's Robert, or
yeah,
he has a problem with it.
Yeah, they didn't speak a whole lot of French in this section, but they did name some things in French, and they have a really beautiful like accent. I love that. Amazing.
And I want to take this opportunity also to say thanks to Johnny Allen. He's a good friend of the Center for Louisiana Studies, and you know, things like this allowing, you know, the understanding the importance of this information to the transmission of the culture here, that, you know, he brought John Brovin to key players at the mm-hmm. right time, and, you know, had these, you know, these recordings done. It's really, really important and a really good thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It really is. Well, we are going to get back to one more little section of interview, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, and I think this is another part, just a little more about dance halls and what happened back then.
And just so you know, I know we introduced them, Helen and Marie Falcon, but those are Joe Falcon's nieces. And they also played, well, I know Marie played music. I don't know if Helen played music. But so after this little section of interview, we're going to play a song that I found yesterday by Shook Richard. It's called Charvianeg, and Marie Falcon is playing guitar and singing. It's really awesome.
That's the places that she named a while ago.
Okay. did you play at T. Maurice?
Oh, yes.
I forgot that.
Oh, yes. Bristol.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that club was like?
Well, this one was a little bit more up to date.
Yes.
You could
Why?
Drink. You could drink there.
Okay.
They had a bar there. And it was a better dance hall than the other because they had built it after the old one. Because when we started going to the dance, it was all old dance hall.
Yeah, just bars.
And this one was more modern, you know. It had been built after.
Okay. Did they have the bandstand at one end of the hall?
Yes, it did.
And they still had the benches.
Oh yeah, they had the benches for the ladies to sit on. Yes.
Right. John Upley there. Let's see. I guess it was about 13, 14 years old. So it was about 1951, somewhere in there. The benches were still there. They were still there in 1951.
And the old ladies would still go to the dance.
And the old ladies would still go to the dance and sit on those benches. 1951. I remember that. Listen, when you said drinking a while ago was allowed in the club, did you have to be 18 to drink in there?
There was no drinking.
And I'm talking about Timorese.
Oh, Timorese, no. No, don't you remember Jan and Giffen got drunk at 13 or 14?
Oh, yeah, but that,
one time? And that's back in those days. In
that's a great old one. In our days?
In your days.
No, there was no drinking in the whole...
Mama at Timorese, I'm saying.
That was after, Alan.
That was later on, much later on. Timorese.
Oh, no, I played at Timorese.
But Johnny played when he was 12 years old at Timorese.
Wait, whoa.
That was after you got
Timorese was... You just said a while ago you all played at Timorese.
Yeah.
Right? Could somebody under 18 drink back then?
I don't know if there was any law.
There was no law.
See, John, the reason I'm asking that is because I can remember, like Mom was saying, I can remember, I could just barely put my quarter, you know, reach the bar, put my quarter there, get me a beer, that's certain.
No, there was no law.
Okay. When you sang a dance, what was the format of the program for the evening? Did you just used to take requests?
It was just anything. People would request a lot of songs.
And did you play Uncle Joe's, the tunes that Uncle Joe had recorded?
Oh, yes. Well, the people would come and they'd beg, you know, he had to play them over and over.
Uh-huh.
And she played longer with Doug Crusher and all of them than she did with Bonnie Joe.
I played 2.5 years with Uncle Joe.
She got married young.
Uh-huh. What was the...
And she got unmarried young, too.
It's okay, I won't put it, don't worry.
Well, that don't matter.
What were the most popular songs that... What were the most popular songs that Uncle Joe sang at the dances?
Oh, I would think his own songs, Alain Lafayette. Because he just enjoyed singing them when people would, you know, ask him, come and request.
Okay, and can you think of some other songs apart from that?
Johnny Brown was made a bros song.
Yeah, but not Joe played it. He wasn't know what
he played it. He used to play that. Okay, fine.
In fact, all the band played everybody's song.
Yeah. What time in the evening did you used to start playing?
Oh, the dance would start about 9 o'clock till about 12 o'clock at night.
And
sometime 8:30 till 12.
And it always finished at 12 o'clock, did it?
Mm-hmm. You was hired for them hours, that was it.
Okay, and...
And at the time, it was about $12 to play a whole dance for the whole band.
$12 for the whole band, okay. And how many people used to come to attend the dances?
Oh, there was a lot of people. The country just gathered there.
Did they?
Oh, yeah. Buggies, wagons, gig, very few cars.
What do you call a gig?
A gig... It just has two wheels and you hitch a horse on it.
Okay. Like a sulky.
Yeah. And people just, and it was just the French people who used to come to the dance.
No, they did bunch up together.
Yeah.
You see, most of the dance hall then was like in the country.
Yeah.
like Rain OST was in town, but the others, it was more like in the country. The country just went there.
Okay, and did you have any electricity?
No.
So it was all...
It was either, at last it was either kerosene and lamp, but most of it was all coal oil.
Coal by too.
And did it used to get very, very hot?
Oh, tremendously hot. You put all them people in a dance hall, and you know the body heat and all.
Yeah.
Oh.
Didn't you tell me one time that some of the places you all played, the bandstand was suspended from the ceiling? The bandstand was, in other words, above the people's head.
Wait a minute. It's chicken wire they had all over. We had to have so they wouldn't throw bottles.
That's in Hackberry.
No, in Hackberry, you had to have that.
Yeah, but then you
that was where? In Hackberry?
Hackberry.
What was the club in Hackberry?
Oh, I don't remember the name of it.
No, okay.
I think it's
Sawyer
that had the club, but I don't remember the name of the club.
Did they have chicken wire in the clubs around Lafayette?
It was around the bandstand. Oh, no, that was the only place that I recall that they had it.
Uh-huh. And why did they used to throw bottles?
Because there was a lot of fights, yes, and they threw it at the musician.
No, they didn't throw it at the musician. It's just so we didn't get it.
Oh, no, but I heard that's what they had done.
Wait, let me ask.
I landed in old Houston, feeling mighty fine. met that woman, and now I'm doing time. Dans la prison, la elemental. Moi, je m'en viens de ma maison. Dans la prison, la elemental. Moi, je m'en viens de ma maison. One to go your mail, every day to Louisiana, the place I used to know. I'd have my Cajun sweetheart and then get out the woods and snow. Don't la prison, la elevator, more for bien, no matter what. Don't la prison, la elevator. I'll draw away your tears. Yes, it will be waiting for 24 long years. Though your hair is silver and it turns to gray, my little Cajun heart, I'm coming home to stay. Dans la prison, la elevator, moi je m'en viens.
And that was the Oklahoma Tornadoes with Our Religion, and that was La Prison. And before that, we heard Chuck Richard with Marie Falcon, and they played Charvianeg. And we listened to some interviews with Marie Falcon and Helen Falcon-Guillot, and Johnny Allen was in there a little bit, and they were talking about dance halls. And that's what we've been talking about this whole hour, well, the beginning of this hour anyway. And we have Pud Sharp in the studio, John Pud Sharp, and he's talking to us because he's doing a lot of research about dance halls because he's going to put out a documentary soon. And for those of you who are listening and you may not know what a dance hall is, Pud's going to explain it to you a little bit.
Well, I don't know if I could give, like, the end-all, be-all definition, but I had to come up with a definition myself before I started the research so that I had some parameters mm-hmm. to go by. And some of the things that I thought, some of the easiest ways to kind of make it broad enough that we don't leave anything out that may be important was to say, you know, a dance hall has a designated dance floor, and sometimes that dance hall may have chairs on it, but they move it if there's a band playing.
Mm-hmm.
Live music is the primary, music is the primary entertainment. And most of the time, hopefully that music is live, which is probably the best way to enjoy music. I think everyone would agree. But it's okay if these places sometimes also feature the jukebox as the entertainment, but hopefully not all the time.
Mm-hmm. Not a primary
right.
sort of entertainment.
So, and again, I kind of left it broad because I don't want to, you know, sometimes these, over time, places change, the nature of places change.
Mm-hmm.
So a place that started primarily as a live music venue can sometimes turn into, you know, may have just had a DJ in the disco era, but then moved on to have another life.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, many times the buildings that I do find, a dance hall, it may have had five different names. It might have had one owner that entire time, but it may have changed its name four or five times, or it may have kept one name and had four or five owners.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's definitely some detective work. Mm-hmm. I tell people, that's what I want to be, is a dance hall detective.
That's awesome. First one.
Yeah, I need to have a card printed that says that. But you know, some of those interview section from the John Brovin collection, they covered so much ground there. That's, you know, if you live that life and that was part of, you know, part of your experience, it's things that come, things that you just know naturally. But for someone like me that's doing this research, those are all these little things that they rattle off of the layout of the bar, the fighting, the chicken wire, the kind of songs they would play. I think there's another interview where they asked what kind of people would be there, or what people would wear. All these things are like really interesting, and they're harder. This is information that's not always easy to come across.
Mm-hmm.
So I really treasure these little things when I can find them.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk a little bit about the layout? I know they kind of mentioned like the bullpen and benches and stuff lining the dance floor and stuff. But do you have any more details, maybe?
Yeah, sure. Well, some of the details I get from firsthand accounts and, writing. But some I get from interviews with people, and some of the things that really stick out in people's mind, the bullpen where men would be before they paid to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting that they pointed out in the interview that women usually did not pay to dance, but men paid to dance. Men would wait in the area that they called the bullpen until they had an arranged partner, or they were ready to go to the dance floor. And that was somewhat of a holdover from the house dance days, when the sexes were kept very much separate, because, as they said, they you could get in trouble if you got seen holding hands, or God forbid, a boy have his arm around your neck. And, you know, so these are, then there's the seating area where the grandmoms would and moms would watch you like a hawk, everyone said.
Yeah.
And, you know, these things that we're talking about, these are pre-electricity for the most, well, in the beginning they were pre-electricity. And then in the later days, so my friend Ray Vadreen, whose brother Chick owned the Southern Club in Opelousas, he says that, as far as boys and girls being kept separate, that people would come up and bribe, either try to bribe him or other employees to flick the lights off for a second so that a boy and a girl could slip out the side door undetected by their watching mothers and grandmothers. And just little things like that, the like unexpected tidbit of information. That's my favorite thing. A lot of times there was a rail around the stage, and the people that played in the bands, they say that was for our protection.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that chicken wire that
right.
when things, not so much the rail on the stage is not so much for fights particularly, but just because the dancers, you know, would get caught up in the moment and they would come right up onto the stage. And that's another thing I think is, while I'm, you know, on it for a second, it's important that dancers, they really ran this whole thing. It was really their, you know, people talk about the dancing. The drinking and the fighting and, it's where people went to court. And it did serve all those functions. But, particularly the band that played, they were at the mercy of the dancers.
Yeah.
Because if people don't dance, you don't come back and play.
Right.
You know, you could be booked for a month in that first weekend. If you don't get people on the floor, people aren't going to be there, and that's the end.
Yeah.
A couple of people told me that they would leave their club while people were there dancing. They would go around to the other local clubs. They would check out the parking lot, see how many cars were there. They would take note of the bands that were playing. And then they would also take note of the individual cars that they recognize that are normally at their place, but they're someplace else, and they would single those people out later and ask them why aren't you dancing at my place.
Wow. So. Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, like the people ran the the club, kind of like the dancers ran, the dancing ran the club, because there's the story that Walter Mouton tells about his dad kind of giving him pointers about like really watching the crowd and kind of how to serve the crowd. And it makes a lot more sense now as to why he, you know, felt that it was very important for Walter as a young man to know that, to know like how to please a crowd. That's really interesting. I don't know.
I would say Walter's very good at that.
Yeah, he is. Totally. Yeah. He kept the crowd for 30 years.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, we can listen to some more music or talk a little bit more about...
Yeah, let's go to the next. We're listening to some more festival.
Yeah, I think you had Charivari next up on the list.
And this is one of the places that... I think the introduction sends it out particularly to T. Ed Manuel, but
yeah.
I also want to send it out to my friend Eugene, his son Eugene Manuel, that runs the Manuel T. Ed Manuel's empire now that he's gone, including the jukebox business in Mamou.
All right, we got a something by Charivari called La Holiday.
We're going to send this one out to, in memory of Mr. T. Ed Manuel from Mamou, a little bar that he had over there called the Holiday Lounge. And some place where me and Randy grew up hanging out, playing the jukebox over there. And we wrote this song in honor of the place. Something called The Holiday.
We're going to play this one for Barry Ansley, too. Tells me he likes this song. Thank you.
voiture qu'avec les lumières du dunibule et le blanc sacanière.
Prochaine, je fais du bon pour tout le monde et signe de la soirée pour faire une request, la valse de Reno.
And that was Merlin Fontenot and Austin Peet with the Reno Waltz. And that was recorded by Barry Ansley in 1975. And before that, we heard Charivari with Le Holiday from Festival Acadien 2001. And we're quickly running out of time, but Pud, what did you want to say?
I just wanted to say thank you, Megan, for having me.
Aww.
And thanks to KRVS for having Megan. And also, if you're listening to this and there's something you want to be included as part of the public record about dance halls, maybe your family owned a dance hall or you spend a lot of time in a dance hall, or maybe you heard me say something you don't agree with, please let me know. Because we are desperately trying to get it right. And my name is John Sharp. I'm at the Center for Louisiana Studies here at UL. And my email address is johnsharp@louisiana.edu. And my phone number is 337-482-1320.
Mm-hmm. And if maybe people have video or pictures from a dance hall, maybe?
That'd be great. I would really appreciate that.
Any information?
Any information. I'm working on a website that has, it will have, you know, hopefully a as complete a record as I can get, at least of the names of halls and location and as much information as I can get on them. I would love to have a picture for each one, but like I said, I have over 800 halls now, and a lot of those predate the camera as a popular an affordable thing.
Right.
And definitely, you know, no camera phones back then.
Yeah.
So
hardly phones.
Yeah.
Do you have a Facebook page that people can follow?
Oh yeah,
you
thank
on?
You. I have a Facebook page, which is Dance Halls of South Louisiana. And you can join there. You can add photos there. You can comment on the old photos. Join the discussion and help us document these things.
Dance Halls of South Louisiana.
That's right.
So if you got any information, get in touch with the dance hall detective, John Sharp.
Thanks.
And I'm going to make a stick. And we're going to go out with something that you brought in. But just before we do end the show, I want to thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been really fun talking about these dance halls. And you've been listening to Encore here on KRVS 88.7. You can go to our website and get a podcast. And if you missed your favorite show, or if you want to hear your favorite show again for some more information, go to the website krvs.org and click on podcasts. And all of the locally produced programs have a podcast there. Each week we put them up. So check them out. And give Pud a holler with your dance hall information.
And this is the Lafayette Rhythm Devils from 2002. Festival Sakatian. We'll see you there in a couple weeks at the festival. And this is OST Special.
All right.
Thanks, Megan.
Thanks, Pud.